Prog Watch, music that tells a story, with your friend and host, Big Tony Rausick, a.k.a. Prog Squatch.
Well, hello to all my friends out there in Prog Land. This is Big Tony, your host, and for this week's Prog Watch, I've got an interview program centered on a very interesting artist, Jerry Murata. Jerry is perhaps one of the most prolific drummers in the history of modern music and has played on literally hundreds of albums. In his early career, he was a member of the band Orleans and then went on to do stints in Hall & Oates, the Indigo Girls, and Stackridge. Over the years, he has also worked with Annie DeFranco, Sarah McLachlan, Marshall Crenshaw, The Dream Academy, Suzanne Vega, Carlene Carter, John Mayer, Iggy Pop, Tears for Fears, Elvis Costello, Cher, Paul McCartney, Carly Simon, and many, many more. Of particular note to progressive rock music fans, and I assume you might like progressive rock, is his association with Peter Gabriel, Tony Levin, and Trey Gunn of King Crimson, who now works with Jerry in the Security Project. Jerry and I had a great long conversation, and I'm going to let you hear some of the highlights of that chat a little later. So get ready. We will be hearing plenty about his time with Peter Gabriel, working with Tony Levin, and the Security Project. We will also be listening to some great tunes that all feature Jerry, such as this next tune, On the Air, from Peter Gabriel's second album, sometimes called Scratch because of the cover image, back in 1979.
On it.
That was On the Air from the second eponymous Peter Gabriel album in 1978. That was the first to feature Jerry Marotta. Now let's hear Jerry talking about how he got involved with Peter.
You know, speaking of resumes, I mean, you played on some great records by Orleans, Hall & Oates, Tears for Fears, Elvis Costello, just to name a few. I love all that stuff, but my show is about progressive rock, so I'd like to maybe focus a little more on your time with Peter Gabriel, if we could.
Absolutely.
I mean, you played on some of his classic records, from the second album, which some folks call Scratch because of the cover, through to So. Right. How did you end up meeting Peter and playing on all those great records?
You know what? I don't even know. It was in 1977. I had been playing with a band called Orleans for about 2 years. And in 77, the leader of that band, John Hall, quit unexpectedly. And so, by the way, I loved Orleans. I mean, I idolized that band.
They're still the one for you, huh?
Yeah, but not the one and Dance With Me are not really good examples of how good that band is. If you listen to like their first record, it was much funkier and was less polished. And there's great songs on it. They're much, you know, deeper in vibe. There's still the one's a pop song and a great one.
It is.
But that, and as is Dance With Me. But yeah, it was just a different, the band, the real core of that band was very different than that. But anyway, John quit and I don't know, within a month, I don't know how it happened. I just got, lucky. I don't know. I know Tony Levin was playing with Peter already. I don't know if he recommended maybe my brother or he recommended me, one or the other. I'm not sure. My brother wasn't going to do it. He was too busy. And I was just ripe because I was heartbroken about the breakup of Orleans. So it was that. I listened to that first record and it was so off the wall, nothing like anything I'd ever listened to. To be very honest with you, like, I didn't know who Peter Gabriel was. I didn't even know who Genesis was.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was more like a Motown, you know, meets Doobie Brothers, you know, soul, you know, rock and soul music. That's my background. So I listened to that first record with Moribund the Burgermeister.
Yeah.
And Excuse Me, and like the songs were so off the wall, not funky at all in that black sense. There was none of that, none. There was no Grease, what I mean is I see, like, in America, we have a background, you can have a background in that greasy, gritty, really black soul, R&B, funk. That's blues, jazz, you know, that stuff came, that American music, you know, it just had, I don't know how else to describe it, but it had that grease, you know, it's funky. And European, English and European bands were more like the Moody Blues and Procol Harum, which at the time, I didn't dislike them, but I didn't love them. But they were much more orchestral, much more classical and ethnic, like Celtic. You know, when you listen to some of those records like Moody Blues and Procol Harum, you know, they're not funky, you know. And so anyway, that was one strike against Peter. But in this case, the music was so unusual. It paid well, and it meant going to England and starting there and touring in Europe, where I had never been before. So those three things made me, and the challenge of the music, because that's what kind of person I am, it was challenging. It was not my wheelhouse. You understand?
Yeah, yeah.
Very different for me. And so I went over and I figured, I'll give this a shot. It paid very well for me. At the time, I was 20. I started playing with Peter, with Orleans when I was 18. And And then I that wasn't even the first band I was in that had a record out. And then I joined Peter when I was about 20 years old. But I just took it as a challenge, and that was one of the best decisions I think I ever made. In retrospect now, there's some complications with what I decided to do, because I became so influenced, changed my way of looking at music and certainly making music and playing drums. Those years, 10 years of working with Peter, Tony, in the end it was David Rhodes, Steve Lillywhite, Hugh Padgham, David Lord, Robert Fripp, who I developed a really tight relationship with Robert for a while, and then played on his Exposure record. That stuff made me view music very differently. And I think what Peter, it's interesting because when you think about Peter's career, there are lots of the old school fans who would say to me, they would say things like, yeah, you know what SO stands for? Sold out. Because SO was really Big Time and Sledgehammer. Mm-hmm. Those songs were like really R&B, funky R&B songs.
Yeah.
It was not Wallflower, Family and the Fishing Net. You know what I mean?
Right.
It was not that stuff. Lay Your Hands on Me. Now, having said that, I mean, Family and the Fishing Net, Wallflower, Lay Your Hands on Me. The Security record is far and away for me, not just Peter's most significant record, but I would say for the time and what it was, what it represented, I would say without a doubt, in the top 10, maybe top 5 records ever made, that's Security. So we'll never go down in history to me in that same sense as well as Security did. You know what I mean? It, to me, SO was a big compromise. In fact, the reason I didn't play on more of SO is because at the time I had worked out a schedule to do Peter's record. And then after that, I was going to do a record with Paul McCartney. And at the last minute, Peter changed his plan and he moved his schedule over the top of when I was going to work with Paul. And with the Paul McCartney record, I could not back out of it. I wasn't going to back out of it.
Right.
There was only Paul, Eric Stewart, who had a band called 10cc.
He wrote,
produced, and sang. And me. It was just the three of us. And Hugh Padgham was producing it. And Hugh was why I got the job. He and I worked on records together. He brought me in. There was no way I could just bail on Paul's record. I just wasn't going to do it. So I think that sort of ticked Peter off to some degree. Like at the time, maybe he felt insulted that I decided to work with a more famous artist than him, which is very definitely not the case.
Yeah.
Because I think they're both tremendously talented. And so that sort of took, in the end, I was working on Paul's record in Sussex in his studio. Peter was in Ashcombe House at his studio, and it was only a couple of hour drive to go back and forth. So on the weekends, I would drive to Bath and do whatever I could to participate with the SO record.
Now let's hear another great Peter Gabriel track on which Jerry Marotta was featured. This is I Don't Remember from the third Peter Gabriel album in 1980.
Find me. What's gone is gone, and I do not
I Don't Remember from Peter Gabriel's 1980 album, sometimes called Melt because of the cover. Now let's hear Jerry talking more about being in Peter's band for some of his most important progressive rock albums.
While you were with Peter, I mean, you mentioned before Tony Levin. I mean, you also played on, I think, most, if not all, of his records. What's it like working with him? Is he, he's so different in his own, you know, on his own wavelength, more or less. I mean, does he represent any special challenges from a rhythm section standpoint to work with someone like that?
Well, I mean, Tony is like my soulmate when it comes to what I do. What I do when I play drums and percussion is always works best when I'm working with Tony on anything. I mean, Tony and I play together very well. In the same respect, for me, what I do is most significant and has the most impact when Chad Blake is recording me playing drums. And Chad Blake is an engineer who I did many, many records with. None of Peter's records, by the way. Although he did mix. He mixed a one of Peter's records, Up or Us or Up Us or Up Yours. I don't know. one of Peter's later records, Chad mixed. But Tony Levin is really, he defines the bass for me. It's not even it's not fair for me to compare any other bass player. Tony is, I don't even know what words to use, a genius. He's the most soulful, the most adaptable, most musical. I mean, I've had Tony play on numerous records that I produced with, you know, I mean, amazing results. I just used him again recently on a record with a woman named Sarah Parada, who I'm producing. And I mean, he's my close friend. I was his best man at his wedding.
Cool.
We did the Tony Levin band. I did a couple of records with Tony, a live record, I guess. And, you know, it's when Stickmen came around, I've always wanted to do something with two stick players. But this was not the right project. Kind of in the same respect that everything I had done with Robert Fripp and Trey Gunn, who, by the way, I mean, Trey Gunn is one of the most underrated musicians on the planet. There's no question. The guy's brilliant. In the same sense that Tony is. But people just don't. I think Trey ended up in the shadow of Robert Fripp for way, way too long. Way too long. There was a time where I think Trey should have just, he had to come out and do his own and get involved in doing his own things. And you know, when Robert and Trey and I started working on the material that was going to become King Crimson, because at that time, Robert had wanted me to be the new drummer in King Crimson. It was just not for me. It was not for me. It's not really, I was not interested in where that was going. And in a similar sense, Stickmen, where Tony was going with Stickmen, was not really I couldn't really give it, you know, put my heart and soul into it. But I did some real great work with Robert and Trey. And now, of course, playing with Trey in the Security Project has been, I mean, I wouldn't have done it if it wasn't for Trey, you know, because the people had approached me, wanted me to do this thing, Security Project.
Yeah. Why don't we talk about that? Yeah. Let's elaborate.
I just didn't want to do it. I wasn't interested. I mean, it's kind of like going back and remarrying the woman that you divorced. And I don't mean divorced in like in a bad way. It's just like, that's maybe a bad analogy. It's more like, because I never had anything but like wonderful experiences with Peter Gabriel, but never. I just wasn't interested. I'm always moving on to the next thing. You know, I've got like three band projects new in the works right now. I'm in Florida putting together a band with, you know, a guitar player that I from up north, a guitar player from down here outside of Orlando, bass player from down, you know, guys that I'm just constantly trying to put these groups of people together and create new projects. And but they, what they did, the guys that asked me to do it, they eventually they came to me and they said, well, what if Trey Gunn did it? Which they had already spoken to Trey, and they said, they approached him and he said, if Jerry will do it, I will consider doing it. If Jerry's doing it, I'll consider it. And that's how they got us both into it. So and that's just been, you know, that's been, it's mind blowing to play with a guy like Trey, because he's on such a, like Tony, he's on another level, you know.
Yeah.
There's very few people that I play with that are on another level. It's like I always call it walking on the moon, you know, and I feel like I've gotten to walk on the moon a couple of times and most people haven't. But, you know, working with Peter, but I have to preface this with, I include Larry Fast and Tony Levin, and in the end, David Rhodes are just as significant as Peter to a large degree. Because those records, the stuff that we did together and when we played live, there was a collaborative, you know. Tony, what Tony brought to the table, what Larry Fast brought to the table. I mean, guys, musically and you know, technically, brilliant. You know, it's like a scientist. And he's also incredibly musical. And Tony's got the same thing. But Larry Fast doesn't end up being like a Jordan Rudess. Like, because of his ability as a player, he doesn't execute and he doesn't show it quite the same way as someone like Jordan Rudess does, who's brilliant. Brilliant. But, you know, he plays more, he can play more with one hand than most, than three keyboard players at the same keyboard playing. And Larry just was the perfect guy. We just worked. We were like a, we worked so well together. Tony, Larry, Peter, and I. And then we had a couple of different guitar players, all good. But when David entered the picture, the whole, the overall, he was the last piece of the puzzle. Mm-hmm. That band was just breathtaking.
Let's listen to one from Peter Gabriel's fourth album now, often called Security. Again, this has Jerry Marotta on drums and percussion. This is Lay Your Hands on Me.
Reaction levels much too high. I can do without the stimuli.
I'm living way beyond my ways and means, living in the zone of the in-betweens. Thank you.
Watch, we'll be right back.
And fat men play with their garden hoses. Before the break, that was Lay Your Hands on Me from the fourth Peter Gabriel album, sometimes known as Security, released in 1982. Like his previous three records, Peter did not actually title this album, and his record company was getting a little antsy about this practice, so they put a sticker on the shrink wrap which simply said Security. Hence the title by which many fans call this particular record. Anyway, let's get back to Jerry Marotta, this time talking about how his time with Peter came to an end when Peter went in a new direction with the So album.
Sadly, So went a whole nother direction. I think technology really enveloped Peter, and I've had this conversation with him. I don't think it served him well at all. I think this tech, he got so wrapped up in technology. He was back in the early, in the, you know, the scratch, the melted face, security. Those records were all recorded by us being in a room together and jamming. And there was no Pro Tools. There was no digital recording. You know what I mean? Yeah. It was just go in there and hash it out. And that's what we did. And I think that something got lost. I know it did. I mean, I don't think Peter's done anything. You know, I mean, Soul was hugely successful. But I don't know. The security record, you know, there are a lot of people that just all look at that record like, you know, there's never been anything. No one's ever done anything quite like it. And at the time, it was so groundbreaking. In so many ways, it changed the way people were making music. That next year and a half after that record came out, you know, I played on a lot of records, a lot of sessions, and I was going all over the world, and every single control room had that record, and every single studio had some low-level underling intern kid come up to me at the coffee machine and ask me if there's any chance that I would stay after the session so we could talk about how that security record was made. I spent a couple of years explaining to engineers, studio owners, musician people, be like, how did you make this record? Everybody wants to know. It's like, it's freakish. So that was actually a good time, a great time. And I think I really feel like Peter veered off of that path with synths and technology and everything. I mean, after security, I don't think Larry played on So at all.
I don't think so either, yeah.
Very little, which was really unfortunate. And what we did do was one of the sessions I did, we did a version of, I think it was Big Time, and I had goosebumps for a day and a half because it was like security, but the next generation, the next, you know, security 2.0. And that is not the song, the track that you hear on the record. The one on, you know, it wouldn't have been a hit, a worldwide hit. It was just, again, more like in that security headspace, deep, you know, just so dark and so beautiful. And so, you know, it was just unusual. So that's unfortunate that we didn't get to continue together and explore that. Peter kind of broke up the family, really. That's the only way I can put it. He broke up the family. And it's a shame that we never got to follow through with that. I've rarely ever worked with anybody who has the same mindset and is willing to spend 5 days working on one song to get it right. Most people, they don't have the time or the budget or the inclination to do it, but that's what we did with Peter. That's a talking. I hope some of it will make it to your interview. I'm sorry.
Oh no, it's great. It's great stuff. Yeah, it's insight into what was going on.
I don't talk about it much. It's funny. I realized recently, as I get older, I'm going to write Peter a long letter, which I really have been meaning to do, more recently, just to go back and, you know, I have a residential recording studio in Woodstock called Dreamland. And for the last 5 or 6 years, my studio is very much like Ashcombe House was. It's not like real world where Peter has, you know, I mean, we have a lot of equipment. It's incredible, the place, incredible. But I kept wanting to invite Peter to come to Dreamland with Tony, David, and Larry Fast, and let's get together and spend a week in the studio, like, at synthesizers and keyboards and drums and percussion, less computers, less, you know what I mean? And
the old see way. What
happens. Just yeah. a week. Just spend a week. Let's just spend a week. Tony lives up in the area. I mean, Larry Fast lives 2 hours away. David and Peter can come in from wherever they are and spend a week just banging their ideas around. I'm going to do it. You know what? I'm finally going to actually put it out there to him. Although I don't know if you know this, but I found out that Peter's wife is very ill.
Mm.
So, I mean, like, very ill. So he may be preoccupied, and I don't really want to. I want to approach him with this, you know, at a time in his life when he's happy and things are
in
good.
In a better place, yeah. It's exactly. Probably a good idea.
Yeah.
In the course of our interview, you also heard Jerry talking quite a bit about Tony Levin. So let's sample some of his work with Tony. I'm going to play two tracks back to back, both from Tony Levin's solo albums. First, we will hear Pieces of the Sun, the title track from Tony's 2002 album, followed by Places to Go from Tony's Resonator album in 2006.
It's good to be back. Gee, we left here in a hurry, didn't even bother to pack. It was way back 3-4 billion years ago. We didn't mean to be a stranger, but we had a lot of places to go.
Just too busy, and I had a
What we just heard was Places to Go from Tony Levin's 2006 album called Resonator. Immediately before that, it was Pieces of the Sun, the title track from Tony's 2002 album. Now let's hear some more of my chat with Jerry Murata.
You want to talk a little more about your own thing with the Security Project? I was listening to some of it, and it's not just straight up, you know, let's sound just like the record. It's like reimaginings of some of these songs. And you're going on tour with that this summer, correct?
Yeah, we're going in about a month. Or, you know, we're going out in the Northeast, which is kind of where we tend to play. The Security Project started out, and it was kind of centered around a singer named Josh Gleason, who was in a band called, what are they called? My memory of the Waiting Room, something like that. I met him in Woodstock because Eric Horsball is the guy who was involved with that band, and with Josh had connected with Tony and myself and Larry to see if we wanted to do this thing with Josh, you know. And I went to see him, and he had the monkey makeup on and the white suit, you know, and he sounds like Peter Gabriel. So that was the beginning of it. Josh was great. The only thing with Josh was he had a wife and two children and a new one on the way, and a very, very good job. So Josh was good for about 10 gigs a year. So we couldn't really do that. That was not going to work. So we found a guy named Brian Cummins from, he lives in Liverpool, who sounds just like Peter, and amazing singer and a super great guy, who has his own band and does his own thing. And I think it became clear that he was not going to last one way or another. Either he was going to quit, or we were going to kick him out of the band, because he was not really a team guy. And he was, and I love the guy. He's still my good friend. Love him. But I think he felt overshadowed by me and Trey, and you couldn't find two less ego type guys than Trey and I. I mean, I don't put myself above anybody at all. And I think it was hard for him. He was overwhelmed by that, because we don't do it, but everybody else is talking about Jerry and Trey. So anyway, Brian quit the band. We had to find another singer. And you know, as I was realizing that Brian wasn't going to last, I started thinking a lot about the fact that a female singer could be great. Great. Because we get away from the Gabriel thing, the tribute thing, which I don't give a shit about the tribute. It's a tribute. Honestly, it's a tribute to Peter. No question. It's a tribute to Tony Levin. It's a tribute to Larry Fast. It's a tribute to David Rhodes. It's a tribute to Jerry Murata. It's a tribute to all the people, David Lord, who produced and engineered the Security, all John Giblin, all, you know, John Ellis, all the people that work with Peter. That's what it is. Because, you know, Peter, I don't ever remember Peter walking into the first day of making a record and he had a song written. I never remember that. So, you know, but the tribute, I don't give a shit about tribute. Yes, it's a tribute to Peter. So, but I thought, I didn't know. I mean, I was thinking, what girl could we get? What woman, what female? And they're out there. And then a friend of mine, Scott Harris, we were having Thanksgiving together, and he said to me, you know, I think what could be very interesting is, and you've worked with her, a woman named Happy Rhodes. Scott's a keyboard player, and also like a prog, and he has a band. And he said, maybe Happy Rhodes could be really good. And I didn't even think about it. I thought about it, but and then we did a gig in Woodstock, and with Brian, and Happy came to the gig. Happy and her husband, Bob, who's also a drummer. And so we saw Happy, and Happy was like totally blown away. blown away. And then Trey and I, after the meet and greet and packing up our stuff and everything, we ended up back in the dressing room together. And we just basically thought, was like, happy. Yeah, what about happy? And happy, we were so lucky that she would even consider it. And because she hasn't really been doing anything musical in like the last 10 years. So Happy came on board, and I mean, it's like another band now, you know? And also, I mean, Michael Kotze, the guitar player, he hadn't been the guitar player initially. But eventually we ended up with Michael Kotze, who Trey knows from Seattle. And he really brought a lot to the table. I mean, he knows David Rhodes. They played together. They were in a band together because he's Welsh and he grew up in England and played with a lot of bands, English bands. So he has that sensibility. So we have the right configuration now. And I mean, now what I really want to see is us branch off and start doing original material or something more than just paying tribute to Peter Gabriel. Now, in terms of, we never really reinvented anything until Happy was in the band. And there were certain songs that didn't really work. They did not work well. They were great with Josh and Brian. But with Happy, Intruder just didn't quite have the same intensity. So we started jamming around, mostly Trey and I to begin with. And Michael, we started kicking ideas around, and we fell into this. I think it's freaking phenomenal. It's not slamming hard. It's like more low key, the way the song starts out, and it just created space for Happy to shine. And I love that, the way that turned out. And I think we did the same thing with I Don't Remember. I believe it was I Don't Remember, and I look forward to doing it with other songs. But, you know, some of those songs of Peter's, they're very hard to reinvent, you know? I mean, Family in the Fishing Net, Lay Your Hands on Me, A Wallflower, there are others, San Jacinto. I mean, those songs, I call them the epics. I mean, there's no point in reinventing them, I don't think. I mean, Lay Your Hands on Me is, you know, it's not even rock music, you know. Those songs are not rock music. They're, I don't know what you would call them, you know. They're so different than any other record that I know of. I don't know, maybe you know something that's that too, but I find them to be so unique to Peter, that and that band. So it's hard to reinvent some of those songs. But, you know, I think we're getting a handle on it as we've played them enough. And the audience, I think, really likes what we're doing. I think they respond pretty well to it. I mean, we'd be playing much, much bigger places if we played Sledgehammer, Big Time, Steam, Don't Give Up, you know, the Peter's hits. But we kind of stay away from the hits. Because if you want to hear them, go see Peter, because he does those.
Yeah.
I don't know how much he does the stuff that we're doing.
Hey, everybody. This is Jordan Rudess from Dream Theater, and you are listening to Prog Watch. I will see you on the road.
Before the break, Jerry was talking quite a bit about one of his latest endeavors, the Security Project, which I believe will be on tour when this program airs. So look for them near you. If you need any more convincing, well, let's listen to a few tracks from the Security Project. First, I'll play a medley of Games Without Frontiers and Of These, Hope, from the Security album's most recent album, 2017's Contact. I'll follow that with a brand new single, Here Comes the Flood, featuring singer Happy Rhodes.
Thank you. Auntie plays with Jane, Jane plays with Willie, Willie is happy again. Suki plays with Leo, Sasha plays with Brit, Adolf builds a bonfire, and Rico plays with it. If looks could kill, they probably will. In games without frontiers, war without tears. Games without frontiers, war without tears.
Shoot, soul, frontier. Shoot, soul, frontier. Shoot, soul, frontier.
Andre has a red flag, Chiang Chi's is blue. They all have bills to fly them on, except for Lin Taiyu. Dressing up in costumes, playing silly games, hiding out in treetops, shouting out rude names. Whistling tears behind in the dunes by the seaside. Looks could kill, they probably will. In games without frontiers, war without tears. If looks could kill, they probably will. In games without frontiers, war without tears. Games without frontiers, war without tears.
Shoot, soul,
soul. and the night shows, the signals grow on radios. All the strange things, they come and go as early warnings. Stranded starfish have no place to hide, still waiting for the swollen Easter tide. There's no point in direction, cannot even choose a side.
That was Here Comes the Flood, a new single from the Security Project, featuring Jerry Marotta and Trey Gunn.
Before that, we heard Games Without Frontiers and Of These Hope from the 2017 Security Project album called Contact. Now let's hear a little more about what Jerry's doing right now.
You are a busy guy, though. I was listening the other day to one of your more recent things with guitarist and vocalist Flav Martin, and Tony Levin was on that record also. And it had a different vibe, but I have to say I really dug it.
Thank you. I'm glad you brought it up.
Yeah.
And it's like a record I've done. That's my most recent thing. That record is now, I mean, we're just now pushing it. It's not really prog at all.
No, but I'm playing it anyway. I'm going to play it on my show. It's my show, and I'm going to play some of it.
Please do. I mean, I love the record. I love it. I don't listen to a lot of stuff that I do. Like, I'm done. It's over with. But, you know, I love that record. I think Flav is great.
Is that how he goes, Flav Martin?
Flav. Okay. Flav Martin and Jerry Murata. It's Martin Murata. It's a duo record, but we've got Tony on it. We've got one of my all-time favorite guitar players, Mark Shulman, and also a guy I met through Flav named Thor Jensen, who's an incredible guitar player. And then we have Peter Primamore, who's a keyboard player, who's like probably one of my all-time favorite keyboard players. We play together in a lot of different projects. And also then I brought in on a couple of songs Gary Schreiner, who played accordion and harmonica on like two or three songs. But the core group is really Shulman, Murata, Martin, and Levin. Murata, Martin, Levin, Shulman, yeah. That's pretty much the core. And Peter and Primamore. That's the foundation of this record. And I'm very pleased with it. And we bounce around a song in Italian. Sounds like, I don't want to say, not that it sounds cheesy. It's not hard hitting, you know, acoustic. It's like Flav is Italian. He's a balladeer, you know. You can't get that out of his blood.
Yeah.
So, like Drinking You Tonight, and there's a couple songs that are like, you know, sort of middle of the road, but they're not cheesy, you know. They're soulful and sincere.
Like the title track too, which is called Soul Redemption. And like I said, I'm going to play some of that, yeah.
So this track is a little different from what we often hear on Prog Watch, but I like it and so does Jerry. So here's Soul Redemption, the title track from the Flav Martin and Jerry Murata album.
In my hair, the refrigerator's open, but it's looking pretty bare. I'm grabbing for the milk, yes, you know I'm taking chances. Pray through those dairy gods, my belly don't turn rancid. What's the truth, my baby? Maybe we can seek it out. As for now, my lady, I got a plan. No one can doubt. How about we go dancing? How about we fly right out of here? How about we go smashing? Smash reality in the mouth, down for the count. Chat about it in the restaurant. That is if time will allow. Supposed to do? What the heck is a boy supposed to do? What the heck is a boy supposed to do when thinking about tomorrow and missing out today?
I have a seat and some coffee if I'm able? Well, a stupid stack of bills is spread out on the table. So I file alphabetically, neatly in a pile. You never know when you need killing for a fire. What's the truth, my baby? Maybe we can seek it out. As for now, my lady, I got a plan no one can doubt. How about we go dancing? How about we fly right out of here? How about we go smashing? We smash reality in the mouth, down for the count. Chat about in a restaurant.
Again, that was Martin and Murata from their Soul Redemption album just released. So I hope you enjoyed this program centered on Jerry Murata. As always, if you want to find more about his work with any of the artists or projects I featured in this program, I will have links for you when I post this show to my website, progwatch.com. That's P-R-O-G-W-A-T-C-H, all one word, .com. While at progwatch.com, you can also find more about ways to listen to the show or subscribe. Support the show if so inclined. Follow me on social media or contact me via email. If you really like these interview programs, I might mention that at a certain level of support for the show, you have access to many of the interviews I have ever conducted. I obviously edit them down for broadcast, so you only hear part when you listen to the show. But at a certain level of support, you can hear everything we talked about if that's something you might enjoy. All the interviews are not posted yet, but it is a work in progress. I have a lot of them there already and try to upload a few new ones every few weeks. You can learn more by following the Support the Show link at progwatch.com or by looking me up on patreon.com. On Patreon, you just search for Anthony Rousick. That's A-N-T-H-O-N-Y-R-O-W-S-I-C-K. So that's it for this week. Thanks for coming along for the ride once again. Until next time, be good to each other. And prog on, my brothers and sisters.